Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Are we watching a soft coup, or are we watching Republican Trump appointees cover their butts going to authors and newspapers instead of quitting and going public? That op-ed in the New York Times from an anonymous conservative Trump appointee claims the president is acting in a manner detrimental to the republic, describes a quiet resistance in the president's inner circle, people vowing to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's misguided impulses until he's out of office. Then there's the forthcoming Bob Woodward book, same claims, including a top aide stealing a policy letter off the president's desk so it won't be implemented, knowing Trump will forget it. Isn't that a coup? Let's bring in Julian Zelitzer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Hi, Julian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And David Frum, staff writer at The Atlantic, former George W. Bush speechwriter, longtime Trump critic, author of the book Trumpocracy, The Corruption of the American Republic. David, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
And I want to start with you. You and others are writing, it is a coup, but you say a cowardly and dangerous one. You just briefly make your case.
Things will be worse after this op-ed, not better. The president's paranoia will be inflamed. It will be harder to give the president good advice against destructive action. The op-ed writer said, we're here to thwart him. So the next time somebody says to President Trump, don't do this or that unwise thing, and they are genuinely unwise things, the president will think, does this person have my interest at heart or not? And meanwhile, everyone in the administration will be hastening to produce professions of loyalty to the president. Independent thought will be even more snuffed out, and the relatively normal people will be under greater suspicion, and the time servers and weirdos will be empowered.
Yeah, well, so that's what you say will be the results of this. But Julian, do you agree with the conclusion that it is a coup?
Well, it is and it isn't, in that it's clear that it seems at least high-level officials are working to subvert the president or to trick the president or to distract the president. The president, which I think David is reminding us, still has power. So in some ways, it's the worst of all worlds. And that's why this is a in-between situation where I do think the publication of the op-ed, which I'm not sure what the aim really was of the person writing it, will simply make matters that much more volatile. Well, and the op-ed's a little like the Republican Congress these days. It's warning about what's going on. It's complaining a little bit about what's going on. But in the end, I'm not sure it's going to actually constrain the president.
Well, but it seems to be to reassure the American people that there are, as the writer says, adults in the room who, again, are trying to thwart the president's every move. But as you both know, others are writing that it's not a coup, it's cowardice. Your colleague, David, Adam Serwer in The Atlantic, this isn't resistance, it's public relations, it's enabling, it's Republicans positioning themselves to say, we told you so.
Right. I think we shouldn't presume that the op-ed writer is necessarily a highly strategic person or has great judgment. They might be lacking in both of those things. They might not understand. But there is certainly a kind of self-serving quality to this, that the op-ed writer wants us to understand that the people in the Trump administration should not be regarded as pariahs. And who's making that argument? We're all glad that James Mattis is on the job. The trouble is that many of the people, in order to keep their position, end up doing harmful things. The question that bothers me most is, once people leave, why aren't they more effective? I mean, we learned from Bob Woodward that Gary Cohn, it wasn't a policy letter that he snatched off the president's desk. It was literally a directive canceling the U.S.-South Korea Free Trade Agreement, an astonishingly disastrous, self-destructive thing. The president then forgot all about it. If Gary Cohn knows, first, the president was contemplating it, second, the president is so mentally impaired that you can remove a piece of paper like this from his desk and he forgets all about it, why is Gary Cohn simply complaining about it to Bob Woodward months after the fact? Why isn't he in front of a congressional committee? Why isn't he giving a speech at the Council on Foreign Relations? Why isn't he saying, this president is mentally impaired? He cannot remember his own policies 5 minutes after they disappear from his face.
Or, Julian, why isn't he, as the op-ed writer said, enacting the 25th Amendment? I mean, the writer says there were early whispers in the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment. No one wanted to precipitate a crisis, and we remembered the 25th Amendment. Amendment, 1967. It allows for the removal of a president who can't fulfill his duties and obligations. They are describing a man who can't do that. Your thoughts?
Well, that's right. There is a mechanism in place, and the op-ed even discusses the fact that this was contemplated, but they didn't want to precipitate what they say is a constitutional crisis. So they haven't moved forward with this. The cabinet has the ability to move forward with a recommendation, you know, that the president isn't fit to serve. And Congress can allow this to move forward, and the vice president would take power. But they didn't do that. So what we have instead is, I mean, you can think of the picture of this room full of officials taking things from the president and trying to prevent him from taking actions they are telling us are dangerous. So I don't know what the answer is, but if what they say is true, then there's a strong argument that that mechanism should be invoked. It's a little like impeachment. There are mechanisms that can be used. So I'm not sure why, if this is true, they're not being used.
And the language, you know, people can Google it, but whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, then, you know, it kicks right in this mechanism. And instead of taking it to Congress, they're taking it, as we said, to authors and newspaper writers. But David, they say that they are trying to keep the government afloat, that they're there trying to run a second-track government. And they feel they're being patriotic.
Look, we all think the relatively normal, relatively honest, relatively patriotic, relatively uncompromised members of the Trump administration for their service. Obviously, it could be a lot worse. We're glad to have people who are trying to do their best and who remember the great traditions of this country. But let's also understand how much harm is being done right now. We have a global trade war. We have NAFTA that is about to be dissolved. No thoughtful South Korean can feel safe after learning that the president wants to abandon the defense of South Korea and wants to tear up the U.S.-South Korea free trade agreement. And what this op-ed has produced are declarations of loyalty to the president from Secretary Mattis, Secretary of State Pompeo. Paul Ryan denounced the op-ed writer as a coward. Even the First Lady, who never speaks and obviously has very little time for this president, even she gave a statement of loyalty today. The president is, I think, he's impaired with public opinion, but he's a little stronger, a little with a somewhat tighter grip on power today than 48 hours ago.
Julian, I have to ask you if this is reminding you of another time when I heard the word impaired. Another time, I'm thinking of James Schlesinger and Richard Nixon.
Sure. You know, the two moments that have been discussed are Richard Nixon, especially in that final year when there were all kinds of fears with Schlesinger, Kissinger, who were trying to control what was going on in the White House, fears that the president had lost control. There's also a nice article in The Atlantic today looking back when there were concerns about Reagan for the same thing. But this seems, if this is all correct, it seems even worse because this is both about a president consumed with a scandal. It's about a president who is not fit to serve. That is the charge that's being made. And in some ways, we're fortunate things aren't worse if this is all the case. Yeah. But we can't rely on officials who we don't even know who they are to be making decisions and not being accountable. That's the whole point of the democratic process. So this is not really a solution.
Yeah.
And in the end, it didn't work with Richard Nixon. You know, Richard Nixon resigned.
If you want a historical parallel, the closest one is not Nixon and it's not Reagan. It's Woodrow Wilson in the last months of his presidency when he had a stroke, when he was not in charge of the government, and when his wife and doctor kept secret this impairment. And the United States tried to function in 1919 and 1920 without a president. And the result of it was a series of decisions that put us on the road to the Great Depression in World War II.
Look,
it's not encouraging.
Some are saying that this could actually empower Donald Trump because he's already tweeting out, I'm draining the swamp and the swamp is trying to fight back, not noting that this isn't the swamp he said he'd go to fight. These are his people. These are his appointees that surround him. But some are saying that this might empower him. We're hearing from people saying, didn't we already know this? So we'll take this up again. Fascinating. Julian Zelitzer, professor of history and public affairs Affairs at Princeton. Julian, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And David Frum, staff writer at The Atlantic, will link you to his writing, also author of the book Trumpocracy, The Corruption of the American Republic. David, thanks as well.
Thank you so much.